Welcome to the ASCD podcast, supporting you on your journey as a life-changing educator. Here's your host for today's program.
Hi, everyone. This is Anthony Rivora, the Chief Content Officer for ASCD ISTE. Achievement gaps have been a persistent challenge and subject of debate in education for decades. And yet practical, holistic advice for school leaders and educators on the complex work of improving learning gaps often gets lost in the conversation. My guest today hopes to change that. Dr. Teresa Hill is the superintendent in South Holland, Illinois, and she has 25 years of experience in educational leadership. She's the author of the timely and compelling new book, The Instructional Leader's Guide to Closing the Achievement Gap, Five Keys for Improving Student Outcomes. In it, she provides planning tools and resources and details essential areas of focus based on her own work as a school system leader.
Welcome, Teresa. It's great to get a chance to talk with you about your work.
Thank you for having me.
So there has obviously been a lot of commentary on the achievement gap or achievement gaps over the past couple decades, and a lot of related education reform initiatives and school-based strategies. What prompted you to write this book now? What made you feel like it was something you needed to do as an educator?
I think the most important thing for me was the fact that although we've talked about the achievement gap for years and decades, much of that conversation has never really authentically included people that were actually serving in schools. And so educators and instructional leaders often were left out of the discussion. They were often the people that were talked about as opposed to the people that were coming in and doing the talking and the research. And so I really wanted to bring together the ideas from within actual schools of how do we actually address the achievement gap in real and meaningful ways on a daily basis with our children.
Yeah, it's a really interesting perspective and a really valuable one. So you write in your introduction that you want school leaders, instructional leaders, to think differently and strategically about their work in improving student learning and closing achievement gaps. What do you mean by that, thinking differently?
Well, I really want us to shift our thinking from focusing on what the achievement gap is and why it exists, or all of the things that seem to cause the achievement gap from outside of our schools, and really focus in on what do we do within our schools on a daily basis at a micro level that can make a difference for what happens for our children. There are so many things that we know impact our children and our families and communities that it can be easy to shift our focus to those things and away from the decisions that we're making on a daily basis. So I really want instructional leaders to focus in on what are we doing within our schools, what falls within our sphere of influence, and how do we strategically focus in on the things that will make the biggest difference for our kids.
So in your view, what misconceptions do educators and school leaders commonly have about achievement gaps that maybe hold them back or create barriers?
I think the biggest misconceptions really are two sides of the same coin. I think sometimes educators and leaders think that there is so much that happens outside of schools that impacts student achievement that schools really aren't able to make a significant difference when it relates to the achievement gap. And then I think on the other hand, sometimes because there is so much pressure from the outside in the political realm, et cetera, there seems to be an idea that schools can automatically do everything that's necessary to eliminate achievement gaps and improve outcomes. So there tends to be either we can't do anything, or we are solely responsible and we could do everything if we just cared enough. And I think neither one of those things is really true. It's important that educators and leaders really understand that there are things that fall within our sphere of influence where we can do things to make a difference. But we also recognize that there are things that fall outside of schools that are also important and that we can all be really working hard and caring deeply about children and still have an achievement gap. So what we need to do is really focus on what are the strategies that we use and what do we do differently to serve our children.
So related to that, you write about the importance of identifying the sources and perpetuators of achievement gaps within the scope of schools. What is the difference between those two things, and why is documenting them so critical?
Well, the sources of the achievement gap within schools are the things that essentially set students up for struggles or falling behind in schools. They are the things that we see at the very beginning of the gaps that we start to see. So when we see students that come in and they're at level or similar to other students, but then they start to fall behind, there are sources that cause students to start to fall behind. Then perpetuators are, once students are already behind where we would like them to be, or we already see a disparity, what are the things that help those disparities continue to grow as students move through our systems? What are the things that keep those disparities going? And so knowing both of those things is really important, because if we identify the sources for the students that we currently have, it helps us to think about what do we need to change for that new group of students that start school every fall. What are the areas where we can make a difference for that next group of students? No, we can't change it for the students that are currently in the middle and upper grades, but we can identify what do we do differently in the future for the next group. And then for our perpetuators, we have to figure out for those students that are already behind where we would like them to be, what do we do to change that trajectory for them? And so being able to identify both is really important, because we can't write off the students that are a little bit older, but we also need to make sure that we do better by the new students that come in every year.
So you focus on five keys to closing the achievement gap. Meaningful assessment is the first one, language and literacy, experience and exposure, consolidation of knowledge, and perfect practice. So I won't delve into all of these. I hope listeners will read the book and explore them on their own. But what do you mean by meaningful assessment, that first one? How is it different from the types of assessment that schools commonly or typically use?
Well, I would say that most people that have had an opportunity to be an instructional leader for a little while know that we do assessments for a lot of reasons. And many of those reasons are not actually about helping students learn better. We do assessments for accountability. We do assessments to determine how we should spend our money in schools. We do assessments to evaluate teachers and schools, etc. Meaningful assessment is really focusing a set of strategies in how we use assessment to actually improve student learning and change learning trajectories. So it's really about designing or selecting assessments that allow us to work directly with students to find out where they are currently, what they need next, and to be able to monitor how much growth they make based on the instruction that we plan for them. So meaningful assessment walks a little bit away from the ideas that accountability assessment do. Meaningful assessment really focuses on everyone should know what the assessment is and what the assessment is about. Everyone should know what does this student need to be able to do in order to do well on this assessment. And everyone should know if a student performs in one place on the assessment, how we can help them get to the next level on that assessment. I've been amazed at how often educators in particular don't even have access to the results of assessments that are given to students in schools. And what that means is that that cannot be a meaningful assessment, because the whole idea is for the educator to know where a student is and what they need so that they can plan instruction. So meaningful assessment is really about shifting to that idea. Yes, we have to give accountability assessments. We can't get away from that right now. But we need to be able to use meaningful assessment in ways that will actually help students grow, that the educators can know what's going on, and the students as well can help plan for their own growth.
So is it more formative than assumptive?
Absolutely.
Or can it be either?
It needs to start out as formative. We know that in the end, we need summative assessments at times. We need to do grading in schools and things like that. But along the way, we need to be able to use assessment to help students set goals and help students grow, to be able to identify where students need more instruction, more intervention, more assistance, and to be able to make a plan for how to address that.
So I want to highlight this quote from the language and literacy discussion in your book, because I thought it was so interesting. You say, whether schools serve significant numbers of multilingual learners or not, a focus on language learning is a fundamental aspect of improving student outcomes and closing achievement gaps. So what does language learning mean to you in this context, or what should it mean in schools as you're proposing?
So language learning is really about those four basic parts of language. So listening, speaking, reading, and writing. Many times in schools, we underestimate how important that use of language is in how our students do and how much they grow as they're going through school. Very much of what we call our college and career ready standards, state standards, or national standards around the nation are really focused in on how students are able to use language to learn new things, to express their ideas, to organize their thoughts, to share, and to communicate. So that is very much a key to learning in all of our different academic areas. And so whether students are multilingual learners or not, there is a key importance of learning to develop those language skills, being able to think critically, share their thoughts in a organized and a coherent way, being able to take in what others have said, what they have read, and being able to have that level of communication. It makes a difference in what we see in their ability to learn, as well as how we see their ability to interact with others. So it's critical. And sometimes we think that language learning is automatic, but what we know about children in many communities is they have different levels of vocabulary that they are exposed to, different kinds of speech patterns, different kinds of sentence patterns in the writing and the reading that they're doing. And so the more we can develop that in schools, the better off our students will be in their ability to learn as we go forward.
Yeah, it's a really interesting section of the book, as is the part on experience and exposure. And I encourage our listeners to delve into those. You offer a lot of great advice in the book and organizational tools for school leaders. There's a lot about data use, team building, planning, really good tools. What would you say is the biggest takeaway you want school leaders to get from this book, or instructional leaders, especially as we're heading into a new school year?
I think the biggest thing is that I say often that there is no finish line, that we continually have to do this work. But that being said, if we engage in this work, we can make a serious and significant difference in the learning trajectory of our children. And so what I hope that instructional leaders and educators will do is take this time and opportunity to really start delving into and examining where are the gaps that we see, and then focusing in on the strategies that we can use to address those gaps in each individual school and each individual system. And that is a process that really takes putting together a team and really delving into some of these different areas. And now as we're in the summer and we're planning for the new school year to start, now is a great time to really start that process and to start thinking about how do we go through the process of building capacity to meet the needs of all kids as we go into this school year and beyond.
And how about for policymakers and Education Foundation and other organizations? What's the message you want to get to them about closing achievement gaps?
I think the biggest thing that is important for them to know is that, yes, it's very common for us to focus on what I call macro level policies and ideas for closing achievement gaps. But the most significant changes that happen for children happen at the micro level in individual schools, in individual classrooms, in individual systems. And so the greatest thing that policymakers and educational organizations and other groups can do is to help build the capacity of educators and leaders and schools and systems to meet the needs of children. Sometimes when we focus on those big macro level ideas, we actually end up with things that work against schools' capacity to serve children, that take up more time or shift the focus from meeting the needs of individual kids. So I think it's very important for policymakers and others to really start looking at how do we focus not on assessment necessarily or teacher quality, how do we focus on building capacity to ensure that our schools have the ability to meet the needs of kids, because our educators and our instructional leaders really do already have the sense of urgency, and they really do already work on that area of efficacy. What they need now in order to really make that next step is to focus on capacity. So the ways in which policymakers can support capacity are the ways in which they will make the biggest difference in fighting the achievement gap.
That is a great message. Dr. Teresa Hill, thank you for taking the time for sharing your expertise and ideas with us. It's really helpful and compelling information. And thanks to all our listeners for tuning in. To learn more about Teresa Hill's book, The Instructional Leader's Guide to Closing Achievement Gaps, visit www.ascd.org/books.